Our buddy David Allen Miller, the maestro of the Albany Symphony Orchestra, occasionally stops by to tell us about exciting concerts that the symphony is presenting, but we are often frustrated because we don't have enough time because we, tend to go off on important tangents about the musical world. So we welcome David to our microphones this morning to discuss some topics on his mind, as we'll do from time to time. Specifically this morning, the importance and challenges of music education. Maestro David Allen Miller, always a pleasure to have you here on our program.
Hey, Joe, I'm so happy to be back and not necessarily plugging an upcoming concert, although Carmina Burana is coming up, but I won't.
But and you'll be back and we'll plug that.
Our guest conductor, Joanne Folletta, hopefully will be back.
That's right.
Yeah, that'd be exciting.
We'll make that happen.
That's beautiful. Thanks, Joe.
You know, here's the conundrum. I think a lot of people have when it comes to music education is that it seems to me that it is something that is vitally important, but is often either temporary or overlooked. And I don't know if you agree with that assessment or not.
I don't know. I mean, at various points in my life, I've agreed with it. But I must say that living here in the Capital Region, I don't know that I agree with it because I've been so impressed at how vital many, many of the school districts in our region, how vital their music and arts education programs are. I mean, I know this is a difficult time and they're all facing cuts and difficult
right.
challenges. But, you know, I live in Bethlehem. I live in Slingelands. And I've just been overwhelmed by our Bethlehem area music programs and how extensive they are and how many kids are playing instruments. And I know that's just one representative suburban community in the Capital Region, of which there are many, many others and
so
beyond.
When I say temporary, it is the...
You mean like they do it in the fourth grade and then they stop?
Or, right. And some of that's the kid and some of that's the school. But let's talk about the kid for a moment. Of what does it take to hook them for life?
Oh, Joe, that's a very hard question. And that's actually the question that I've asked. You know, my own three children all play instruments. And on the one hand, we've always wanted them to play instruments because of all the great things that go along with it. I always think it's like playing a sport. You know, you play
sure.
a sport, you learn teamwork, you learn discipline, you train right. your body, you learn all sorts of life skills. And the same is absolutely true of learning an instrument, studying an instrument, taking private lessons, and having to solve all those basic technical challenges. And actually, I always think that the fascination is in solving all those issues. And of course, as we know, you know, kids who play instruments tend to do great in school. Now, do they tend to do great in school because the smarter kids play instruments or because playing an instrument makes you smarter? I think it's probably some of both. And I just think that the more exciting and positive and communal the activities a kid has with music, the more likely he or she is to really enjoy doing it and want to continue doing it. So here, for example, the fact that our schools have such great music programs encourage kids to continue music. The fact that we have this wonderful youth orchestra, the Empire State Youth Orchestra, encourages kids to continue to do music as all the great choral opportunities kids have. The Capital Region Youth Chorale, Capital District Youth Chorale is a great example of that. So I think it's if you're bitten by the bug, and then if it's reinforced in school and out of school, then kids really find it a part of their life.
How should the choice of an instrument go? In the sense of, you know, how much of that is on the kid? How much of that's on the parent? How much of it is it matching?
I'm so conflicted with this, Joe, because on the one hand, I have my stock answer, then I have what we did with our kids, which is completely against what I really believe. You know, it's sort of like I wanted my oldest kid to play the cello, so he played the cello. It wasn't. I mean, we let him try different instruments, but we sort of helped him gravitate to the cello. But
right.
I think that a kid should really have as much say as possible, and that ideally, you know, we do this program with the symphony where we go into area schools, three different districts: Albany, Troy, Avril Park, at the moment, and we introduce the kids in the third grade to all the different instruments of the orchestra in the year before they get to pick what instrument they're going to play. So they've had exposure to the instruments, and the kid gets to see which instrument really attracts him or her. And that's, I think, probably the best way. You want a kid to have some sort of connection to an instrument. We had this, our principal trumpet player, Eric Berlin, played solo on the last concert. We had a concerto written for him, and he told this touching story about how he was going to play the violin, and then the summer between third and fourth grade, he saw a trumpet at an auction, and he got so excited. It was like a beam of light came down on the trumpet, and so he changed to trumpet, and he's become, you know, one of the world's great trumpet players. So I think a child has to have a lot of choice. But if a parent has a view of what the child might have an affinity to, I think they can guide gently. I happened to be a trombone player when I was a kid. I had started on piano and hated it and didn't play. And I must say, the rest of my life, I've always felt sad that I didn't continue with piano from the age of four, as my mother would have liked me to. And then at eight, I became a trombonist just because I liked the trombone, and my mother thought it was a good power symbol for me to battle my big sister, who was a very strong strong personality to have this loud brass instrument. And I ended up becoming a really wonderful trombonist and then eventually matriculated into conducting. So
in my in the Wissahickon Elementary School of where I was
taught. You were a star clarinetist, were you not?
No? We had a guy by the name who was the band and orchestra teacher, and his name was Harvey Yutzler. And Harvey Yutzler was a huge hulking man, and he had trumpet lips. You know what I mean?
Those big lips,
pursed trumpet lips,
right.
From years of playing the trumpet. And he used to walk down the hall and tap a kid and say, "Flute."
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Clarinet.
Yeah.
Saxophone.
I'm not
you
sure.
You would be great at, you know, this.
I'm not sure that's how it should go. I think, I mean, obviously each school has its needs. You know, we always need violas or
but
bass
he
players.
But he saw something in a kid that would somehow strike a chord, if you will, with
or not.
An instrument. Yes,
or not.
Or
maybe
or not.
He just was making it up.
I don't know.
Maybe he really needed clarinets that year. Yeah, but I think
he said it with such confidence, though, David.
Maybe he knew something. Maybe he had some laser vision, laser focus.
The
but I tend to think
whisperer.
That in a certain way, it's almost like the instrument is less important than your connection to it. If a kid loves to play the saxophone and that's what he or she wants to play, then you should let the kid play the saxophone, and then he or she can become as great a virtuoso on the saxophone as another kid becomes on the viola. It happened. I sort of pushed my kids towards strings a little bit because being a brass player, I knew how many more opportunities there are for kids to have a really more active experience in youth orchestra and play chamber music and have different opportunities that a brass player might not have. Whereas my little guy, my youngest of my three children, he plays the double bass. I think we really were happy with that idea because he can play, he's a very broad-minded kid and he can play in jazz groups or in polka bands or, you know, if he gets older and stays interested in it.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is it's just like with sports. You know, a lot of kids start soccer and some kids end up becoming really great at it and go to college and play soccer through college and as adults play for fun. A very small group goes on to be pro, almost non-existent group, the top 0.001%. And a lot of kids just had this great experience with soccer. And if they're ever, you know, feeling like they want to have some fun, they know how to play soccer or they know how to watch soccer. So I think it's very similar with playing an instrument. You know, just having that group of skills and having had that education and having had that contact with great music and having had that communal experience of playing with other kids is an extremely valuable and wonderful experience in life. Most of those kids, what I found so interesting in our district, I just did the Bethlehem Orchestra Festival 2 weeks ago. Every third year they do an orchestra festival and then the other alternate years they do a band festival or a choral festival, and they very graciously invited me to conduct this. And I was so overwhelmed by this thing. This was all the kids in the Bethlehem district, and I just used Bethlehem as an example because that's where I was and that's where I live, and I know Gilderlin and other communities, Niskayuna, all over have equally great programs. But at this thing, it was 2 days of clinics where I worked with every orchestra, the fourth grade orchestra, fifth grade orchestra, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, the two high school orchestras, and then we massed them all together, 600 kids on the floor of the main gymnasium in the high school, and we played. Every orchestra played something, and then we played a massed version of the Ode to Joy. And the idea that 600 kids in the little town of Bethlehem are all playing string instruments was just dazzling to me. And it suggests, and my son, who's a very serious and possibly wants to be a professional cellist, commented on how wonderful it is that so many of his high school friends, he's a senior, he's a 12th grader, how many of his 12th grade friends who don't want to be musicians are still playing the cello or the viola or the violin. And so whatever we're doing in some of our communities is really the right thing because we're giving kids this really in-depth experience with music, but it's not just a 1 or 2 year thing. It's really a deep experience.
I love that point because I took private lessons for violin beginning when I was six and all through my teens and into my adulthood was taking lessons and learning and I play occasionally. But I enjoy it. It's fun. It's something to go and to do.
And it's not foreign to you, and it's something that you have a connection with. Yeah. And so when you hear music, whether it's Irish fiddle music or whether it's a great symphony, I mean, you probably have a real connection to it.
And it's just enjoyable.
Yeah.
The other point that I'd like to explore in our final moments, and that is, why I love having you here and talking about the subject is because you seem very optimistic.
I think I am. I'm a little torn. You know, I actually, last fall, I probably should confess this to you. I have this book subject idea that I've been working on, and I actually had a week free, and I flew out to the West Coast and followed a guy who I think may be the greatest violin teacher in the country, Bob Lipsett, who teaches at the Colburn School, this incredible conservatory there. I followed him around for a week and watched him give lessons because I was trying to answer this question, what is it about the greatest instrumental teachers that they give their students that everybody else doesn't get? How does a guy like Bob Lipsett build the most unbelievable virtuosi in the world? And I had a fascinating experience with him, and I think got a lot of answers to this stick-to-itiveness and the sort of unbelievable discipline that he instills in these kids and the passion he instills in the kids. But at the same time, I'm kind of conflicted because I think music should just be for fun. And the people I know who enjoy music the most are people like my father-in-law, who's an amateur violinist, who was a journalist his whole life, but always gets together on the weekend with his buddies and plays chamber music. And to him, that experience with music is so life-affirming. And for those of us who do it for a job, often we have similar kind of experiences, but we kind of look at those amateurs, those passionate amateurs, with longing because they don't do it for a living or for the money or have to worry about, you know, do they have enough work to make a living? They just do it for love. So I think the experience with music, I'm very optimistic about, because whatever one does with it, whether you become a professional or an amateur or just develop a lifelong relationship with and love for music, it's a great thing.
And as a conductor, you feel that in the pipeline, you have great people coming up.
Oh, so many great people. And this is the great challenge for me with my oldest son, who really wants to be a cello player. And because I'm a professional, I know the difficulties of that. And he's a very bright boy, and he's now been accepted to a bunch of universities, but also universities with conservatories attached to them, and would really like to, at some level, just go to conservatory and just be a music bum, you know, just do music and not do anything else. And so we've been having this long dialogue, my wife and I, with him about, you know, the reality of the challenges of being a musician, but at the same time wanting to allow him to pursue his dream. So it's a very difficult balancing act, but a very interesting discussion to have.
You'll be glad when it's over, won't you?
I will. We're in the home stretch. At least he got into schools, beautiful schools, wonderful schools, and he's going to go to one or two of these wonderful schools, because some of the schools now have these combined programs where you can go to university and conservatory concurrently, and that seems like a really attractive option.
And when that's all settled, you'll be a happier
much
guy.
Happier.
Excellent. David Alan Miller is a conductor of the Albany Symphony Orchestra. For more information, go to albanysymphony.com, albanysymphony.com. David will be back next month, and we'll be talking to him soon about more interesting topics as well as what's happening with the orchestra. Always a pleasure, sir.
Thanks, Joe. Great to be with you always.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.